Martin and Mr. Forster again in the Lunsford case. Would you like to reserve some rebuttal time, Mr. Martin?
Yes, Your Honor. 1 minute, please.
You're going to be brief, aren't you, then?
Yes. If it pleases the court, again, Terrence Martin with the Chesapeake Public Defender's Office. And, Your Honors, this matter of Justin Lunsford is before the court. A motion to strike having been denied at the trial court. Counsel argued in that motion to strike that the Commonwealth had not proved any element of the crime of abduction, that in fact there was no evidence that any force was used against the complaining witness, that there was any intimidation exerted against the complaining witness, nor was she detained in any way. And the counsel appellant argued that in fact this is based on the statements of the complaining witness herself, wherein she denied that she was intimidated by the appellant. She denied that she was detained by the appellant.
Okay.
And she denied...
Just to interrupt for a second, in terms of the detention part of it, there was evidence that Mr. Lunsford actually had the keys to the car and that the car was locked. And that she felt that... Not that there was an indication that she stated that she wasn't free to go, but there is some inference that could be drawn from that
yes.
She was being detained.
Yes, Your Honor. The evidence at trial was that the car was sitting with three parties in it, the parties and a child. The air conditioner was on, and that the key was engaged because the air conditioner was on, according to the appellant. In a motion to set aside the verdict, the complaining witness clarified that, in fact, she did not know where the key was.
So wasn't there an indication at the trial that it was March and, therefore, that the air conditioning probably would not have been on?
Judge, I think to the contrary, the only evidence in regards to the air conditioning was the statement by the appellant.
Maybe it was argument by counsel, I believe.
Correct. The only statement, evidentiary statement, was that, in fact, the air conditioning was on and that if the key was located anywhere, it was in the ignition. But again, the complaining witness denied knowing, having any direct knowledge where the key was. That was not a factor, in other words, in her sense of being detained. And so, judges, Your Honors, I think it's also important to note that in terms of the fear and intimidation, at the end of this encounter, the complaining witness exited the vehicle as the appellant exited the vehicle. She approached the appellant, and she punched him in the face. She had no fear of this particular man, and in fact, she said this was just one of many long-term arguments that the parties had ever since they were involved in the exchange of the child for visitation. And the trial court agreed with every element of the argument of counsel. In fact, the trial court said, I agree with defense counsel 100% that the Commonwealth has not established detention. They have not established fear or intimidation. But instead, the court then said, but I will infer, because the complaining witness was not would have had no choice but to leave her vehicle had she decided to leave the car, in other words, leave the vehicle in the parking lot, that would constitute an abduction. But there was no evidence before the court that the complaining witness had that thought in her mind at any time during this encounter, that she was unwilling to leave the car because she didn't want to leave the car. In fact, that she said she was there voluntarily, she was fully engaged in the argument herself, and that when asked if she could leave the car voluntarily, she said yes. So what we have, Your Honors, I think in terms of the evidence before the trial court, was a willing participant in an argument, however unfortunate it was that it was in front of this child. But at no time did the complaining witness feel that any force was used against her. The only evidence of force was a slight touch to the arm, which she characterized as an attempt of the appellant to just say, enough, let's not do this anymore. But she did not, by her own admission, perceive that in any hurtful way or in any way that it would keep her in the vehicle.
I think the Commonwealth's position, essentially, and I'd ask you to address this, is in reference to the totality of sort of the circumstances. being the intimidating factor.
Yes.
Sort of the statements where she said that he has a way of controlling things and controlling the environment and making you sort of do things. Do you want to speak to that in reference to the intimidation part of the abduction?
Yes. She did indicate, the complaining witness did indicate that because of their long history, because of her drug addiction and her perceived feeling that there would be money exchange or financial support for her drug addiction with this relationship, she did sense a certain generalized pressure throughout the entire relationship, but it was not anything specific to this one particular event that prohibited her from, certainly from giving her any extraordinary fear or sense of intimidation. This was just the nature of their relationship. And she readily admitted that there was an imbalance in the relationship, a disparity in the sense of her addiction, his financial support of her, and that is why, in part, she stayed in the relationship. But I would argue that that sense, that type of relationship was does not rise to the level of the sort of intimidation that the statute would contemplate, because that was their everyday relationship. She was not detained in the car, certainly, because of that intimidation. And again, the other element of detention does not, which is also a required element, does not exist, because she said, I could have left anytime I wanted to. I could, and she was very clear about that. She did indicate, and I will concede that she did stay because she didn't want it to escalate, that she would continue to herself in the argument because she didn't want it to escalate. But again, that was a choice on her part to continue in that argument. Had she said, time to get out of the vehicle, I'm leaving because I've had enough of this, and he attempted to stop her, that would have been a different scenario, but that is not the scenario here. So I would argue that a general sense of that of disparity in power in the relationship does not speak to what happened in this particular incident in terms of intimidation. She was generally intimidated because of the disparity in their relationship, her dependence on him. But because of that, she chose to stay. And it wasn't out of intimidation. It was a full choice on her part.
Does
to
intimidation
continue.
Require a fear of bodily injury?
No, I think case law is clear that intimidation can go beyond a fear of physical assault or something that would happen. And I think Your Honor's previous question speaks to that. Was there something there that put her in a place of extreme or extraordinary vulnerability? But I don't think that's the case. She clearly indicated at every turn, I give as well as I get in this relationship. I hit him and on all sorts of occasions. And on this particular day, she was not intimidated because she got out of the vehicle as he left and punched him in the face. So that belies any sense of intimidation on her part. And again, that was just the sort of relationship that they had. And I don't believe it arises to the level of the sort of intimidation here. She was a strong woman in her own right. She continued in the argument. She hit him that day. She could have left but chose not to. And again, getting back to the court accepting at trial that none of the elements, I agree with you 100%, Mr. Martin, was the words of the judge, that none of the elements had been satisfied other than an inference that had she left, she would have had to leave her car. But again, she never expressed that as to why she stayed into the car or if that caused her any sort of fear. That was an inference that really wasn't based on the evidence. And that's why I think it was...
But didn't she testify that if she left, she'd be afraid that the matter would be escalated?
She did, while in the car, she did indicate that I continued in the argument because I didn't want it to escalate into anything further. And again, that was just the ordinary, unfortunately, course of their relationship, especially when it came to visitation. And so when a presiding judge, hearing all the facts, says 100%, his words, you haven't met the elements, Commonwealth, but I, of my own accord, will infer that this woman didn't want to leave because she didn't want to leave her car, when there's no evidence, Your Honor, of that. Clearly, I don't believe that the Commonwealth met its burden in this case. And I would ask the court to remand this or dismiss the charges.
Thank you, Mr. Claus.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Stephen Forrester on behalf of the Commonwealth. I want to start off by addressing the defendant's position as to the trial court's ruling in this particular case, and I would point the court to Joint Appendix 59. And what I believe the trial court was actually saying in this case is, but for the fact that this was a confined environment within a vehicle, then the elements wouldn't have been met. He wasn't inferring that none of the elements.
That's not what he says. You're inferring things in terms of what the court said rather than what the court actually said. The court said, I would agree with the defendant 100%, essentially, but for the fact that the child's in the car. Isn't that essentially what the court said?
I would agree, Your Honor. She says, I agree 100%. She says, the intimidation is essentially, by intimidation, being forced to sit in your own vehicle or get out of your vehicle and abandon that with your child in it. And so I would agree with the court, yes, that he's inferring that there is, again, the child's in the vehicle. And I would also submit to the court that...
Where is there case law that would support that would be enough to sustain the abduction because of the fact that there's a child in the car? It's not directed specifically at the alleged victim in this case.
Your Honor, I don't have any specific case that would address these specific facts. The cases that have been cited on brief and discussed are all in the context of a sexual assault with respect to a parent and a child, with respect to a handicapped niece and uncle. But in this particular instance, when we look at the totality of the circumstances and we take these certain particularized statements and put them in the context of this relationship, we do get to the intimidation of the witness. Now, as opposing counsel has noted, they do have a tumultuous history, and they do have a history of abuse both ways. And as the victim testified, this was a problem almost every weekend that they would get into these disagreements. But as the court's noted, there's a reasonable inference, first of all, that the victim did testify that the doors were locked. And at one point she stated that he had possession of the keys. Although she later says she's uncertain, in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth, that would be indicative of the fact that he was confining her within the vehicle.
What is the court to make, though, by her comments that she felt like she could leave?
Well, I would suggest to the court that it take those comments in the context of their relationship and under the totality of the circumstances. This is a relationship where there is constant physical abuse, and as we have seen...
Where's their proof of that? There's sort of intimation that there was physical abuse, and there's comments that she indicates that if she was afraid this would escalate, that they'd get basically into a physical fight, because what she says is, I'm afraid I'd hit him, and then he'd hit me. So, but other than that comment, where is there other indication of prior domestic violence?
Again, Your Honor, the only reference would be on pages 25 and 27 of the transcript. And on page 27, she says this was a fight was inevitable, essentially happened every weekend. And then on page 25...
She indicated it was a physical fight or a verbal fight?
She read the exact language. On page 27, she states, it was never a scheduled thing. He got his son every Saturday. I came to pick him up. It was a confrontation and fight every weekend. And that's 27.
And why isn't this just an extension of the fact that these two people can't be civil to each other? Why is this any different than any other argument between two people that don't like each other?
Well, I would argue the Commonwealth would put forth a position that in this particular instance, she was not able to leave and that there were other circumstances such that she was intimidated.
But didn't she say she was able to leave?
Well, Your Honor, she did say that she was able to leave, but putting that in context, she said if it was a life or death situation, she could have gotten out of the car. That doesn't nullify being intimidated to the point of staying in there for fear of getting out and only leaving your child and perhaps engaging in a physical altercation outside of the vehicle. I would also suggest to the court that, again, in the context, she also, you know, makes several comments going towards her fear of what would happen. If we look at 25, she says, God knows what would have happened if I had gotten out of that vehicle.
But doesn't she clarify that, counsel, as to what she means, that she's afraid that it's going to escalate in terms of this, you know, situation and that she would end up striking him and then he would end up striking her? I mean, isn't that part of the context that we have to view this case through?
And I agree, Your Honor. Yes, it is the context, and we're taking the context of their relationship when we're looking at all these facts together. But in the totality of the circumstances, I believe it goes beyond just a tumultuous relationship to a point now where she feels either I'm going to get out of the vehicle and there's going to be a physical altercation and I'm going to have to leave my son in the car. But I would also note for the court that there are statements by the defendant threatening to discipline and harm the child. We have a statement where he threatens to spank the child if he doesn't stop crying. And you know, I would agree that that goes to this other point of intimidation where although the aggressive conduct is directed towards the child, she is in a position where she cannot leave the vehicle at that point for fear of being either she's going to be harmed or her child's going to be harmed. And so, again, we're looking at all of the circumstances combined. And again, I would go through the record and fall back to the standard of review. And it's the sufficiency of the evidence, and all reasonable inferences are in favor of the Commonwealth. And when we look at these statements, again, she was scared of what was going to happen after that when she called 911. She was scared to get out of the vehicle. Defendant was very controlling. We have the inferences from the doors being locked, the keys, him having position. At one point, he grabs her arm, although she later...
Does there need to be a fear, though, of bodily injury?
I would agree there does not necessarily need to be a fear of bodily injury, as the case law would suggest that that's not... You don't have to have a fear of bodily injury. However, in this particular instance, I think that that was one of the fears, was bodily injury.
She certainly never articulated that.
Your Honor, to the extent that she says it would have escalated, I believe she does not use the definitive words there would have been a physical attack. However,
all she had to say was I was afraid of him, and she had more than an opportunity to say that, didn't she?
I would agree, Your Honor, she could have said that, but I also feel that part of this relationship...
But if that's what she really was concerned about, it seemed to me she'd have said it.
Well, Your Honor, I think, in other words, she did say it multiple times throughout the testimony at trial. She's discussing the fact that he's controlling, he's very controlling, that she's afraid that once she gets out of the vehicle, it's going to escalate during the night. You know, she makes the phone call to 911 and says, I'm scared of what might happen at this point. It's this collection of facts and circumstances that go to the totality, which ultimately leads to the fact that intimidation was proven and the fact that she was within the vehicle as a detention component. And for all of those reasons, the Commonwealth would ask that the court affirm the decision as the evidence was sufficient to prove that the defendant was abducted by intimidation. If the court has no further questions, rely on my brief for any other argument.
Thank you, Mr. Forster.
You're very welcome.
Mr. Martin.
And, Your Honors, I would just briefly say that the Commonwealth cannot rise above its own evidence. And at every turn in this case, the complaining witness negated the elements necessary for a conviction for abduction. She clarified every matter in terms of her detention, any sense of fear or intimidation, and she clarified that to the point where she was, in fact, denying that any of those things happened or they were subjectively felt by her on that particular day. And I would ask the court to consider that it is her evidence, her statements. I'm not asking the court to infer anything other than what was said at trial. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll come down and greet counsel.